Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in the pit stop with Tim the Spanish, Stephen Wilson, Speedway Digest Radio Network. Right off the bat, we've had some, we've lost one of our sports pioneers, Mr. Jeannie Dunleavy. Jeannie was born April 8th, 1924, was owner of Dunleavy Racing, and he began fielding his team in 1950. He drove for his team at first, but soon gave way to other drivers. Dunleavy earned a reputation as working well with young drivers over his tenure as Kenny Schrader and Jody Ridley won NASCAR Rookie of the Year honors while driving for Dunleavy. Dunleavy served in the United States Navy during the 1940s. Afterwards, Dunleavy started his own auto repair business and began to develop an interest in racing. He was inducted into the International Motorsports Hall of Fame in 2007, which is located just adjacent to the Talladega Super Speedway here in Talladega, Alabama. Dunleavy closed his racing team after the 2002 season. In 2006, he stated that he still had several cars in his race shop, but was in process of selling them and had no plans to return to racing. That's a little bit about Mr. Judy Dunleavy. I would like to read off, let me bring Stephen on right quick. Hey, bud, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, Stephen. I know we got a short time to get everything ready because you've got Mr. Marcus Lemonis coming on, CEO of Camping World and TV host. But, Stephen, if we can, let me read this statement sent out by NASCAR today from NASCAR Media. With the Jeannie Dunleavy's passing this week, this is from NASCAR. NASCAR lost a treasure, a man who personified NASCAR's proud past. With 863 starts as a NASCAR Sprint Cup Series car owner, he won over millions of fans through his 50-plus years in our sport. The list of men who drove for him during his career is impressive, including two who won NASCAR Sprint Cup Rookie of the Year honors, Ken Schrader and Jody Ridley. Others include Dick Brooks, Ricky Rudd, Dick Trickle, and Benny Parsons. All contributed to Jeannie's lasting legacy in our sport. NASCAR offers sincere condolences to Jeannie's family and friends at this difficult time. And I know that's a hard time. And Stephen, if I can, let me keep on going and get our invocation and everything in. Stephen, I'll give you a second if you want to talk about that, about Mr. Jeannie Dunleavy, and I'll find everything and get it going.
No, it's fine. If you want to just continue on, that way we can get to this. In about 5 or 7 minutes, we're going to have Marcus Lemonis, CEO of Camping World, here on the line.
Okay. That sounds good. I'm trying to find. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, let's keep Mr. Jeannie Dunleavy's family and friends in our prayers, and if you would, let's bow our heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, for ever and ever. Amen. And I want to find the national anthem, Miss Donna Elkins from Talladega Super Speedway, with our national anthem, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's the invocation and the national anthem by Miss Donna Elkins, good friend of mine, and Suzanne. Stephen, I know, you know, we talked about Junior Dunleavy, and the number to call in is 215-383-3681, and just a reminder, we have Andy Hillenberg at the bottom half of the hour, 7:30 Eastern Time. And Andy asked me, he does not want to have any questions asked about Rocking Him Speedway, so we will honor his request. And Stephen, you got the floor if you want to talk about anything, introduce who we got coming on before we get Marcus on.
Yeah, we got Marcus Lemonis coming on at 7:10. He's the CEO of Camping World, the sponsor of the Camping World Truck Series. He also is the star of The Prophet on CNBC. He's going to be on for a couple minutes to talk about his sponsorship there of NASCAR and what he's got going on with it. And they just recently announced that they would be extending their sponsorship of the Truck Series out from their original scheduled date. So we're going to have him on to talk about that. And, you know, we've got a couple different races coming on this weekend. We've got Gateway back on the schedule. We'll be there this weekend. I think we got about 38, 39 trucks right now on the pre-entry list. I think I saw earlier today. It's the first time that they've been back there in several years. So good to have another track there on the schedule, and, you know, good to have another at least short track out there.
Yeah, that's right, Steven. And I wish we could get, you know, everything back to North Wilkesboro. You know, I know you do that. Save the speedway and everything. I wish we could get at least a truck race back at Wilkesboro. But, Stephen, if I can, while we're waiting on the NASCAR Camping Truck Series was in Texas at Texas Motor Speedway Friday night. I'm going to read off a few things, if that's okay, Stephen, because this is the official result, Texas Motor Speedway, Fort Worth, Texas, 1.5-mile paved oval. Total race length is 167 laps, 250.5 miles. Matt Crafton won the WinStar World Casino 400, his fifth NASCAR Camping World Truck Series victory. The time of the race was 1 hour and 53 minutes. Average speed, 132.970. Margin of victory was 13.302 seconds. Caution flags was 4 for 23 laps. Lead changes was 8 amongst 3 drivers. The top 10 drivers was Matt Crafton, Johnny Sauter, Ron Hornaday Jr., Ryan Blaney, Timothy Peters, and don't let me mess it up. Carogo, I'll mess it up. You know how I am with names. And then Ben Kennedy, John Westtown, and my good friend, and Jeff Burton. Jeb Burton, ninth. Joey Coulter ran out the top 10. The Keystone Light Polo Award was Justin Lofton, number 20, 179.677 miles an hour. Mobile One driver of the race was Matt Crafton, number 88. And the Sunoco rookie of the race was Ben Kennedy, number 31. And, Stephen, that's just a little bit of the truck stuff, and I know we got a jam-packed show. I just try and get everything in, and I want to throw out about the ARCA race, and then we're going to bring Mr. Marcus Lamona's on. Suzanne's got him in the screening room. We're going to bring him on. My good friend Will Kimmel, the number 69 Ingersoll, ran in the ARCA race, finished fourth at Pocono International Raceway. I want to give him a big shout-out. And, Stephen, I'm going to bring Mr. Marcus Lamonis on. Mr. Lamonis, you're in the pit stop with Tammy Spine and Stephen Wilson. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great, Marcus. And I'm going to hand you over to Stephen. Stephen has a big lineup for you tonight. We're going to let Stephen handle you tonight. And thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule, Marcus. Here's Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest. Thank you.
All right, my friend.
Hey, Marcus. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. I got a couple questions that we're going to talk about your sponsorship here at NASCAR. In 2009, you took over the title sponsorship of the series. Prior to this, what was your interest in NASCAR, and what did you feel was the defining moment as to why you thought that Camping World would be a good fit in taking over the sponsorship?
Well, you know, I'd spent a lot of time prior to 2009 really studying the sport and understanding how the customers traveled and how they behaved and what they did there on the weekends. And, you know, I fell in love with the sport back in 2007. I not only like the sport, but I like the community that exists. And so as we moved closer to 2009, I was looking for a way to become a long-term partner in the sport. And so often you see a lot of these sponsors, they come in for a year, they make a big splash, they disappear. They show up on one car, they bring all their fancy corporate people, and they disappear. And, you know, for me, what I learned in talking to both drivers, teams, and fans is that they really are looking for long-term partners, people that truly are going to be invested in the sport. And, you know, I needed to look for a way to make a splash in an affordable way where I can get a return on my money, but in a way that I felt like I could be there for years and years to come.
And that brings up a good point and kind of ties into my next question I have for you. Since you've taken over, you had stated here just a couple weeks back when you announced your extension of the series sponsorship that your business has grown about 30% since the title sponsorship in 2009. How has that exceeded your expectations, and where do you see this heading into the future for you guys?
Well, you know, it's been the truck series and NASCAR as a whole has been great for our business. But at the end of the day, it's really the fans that have helped me build my business. And quite frankly, I always remind my employees that we work for our customers. And so as we've opened up new stores and new markets, we've had a lot of people that have come to the store. They've been familiar with the truck series. They've been really appreciative. And we continue to look for stores in markets that are close to tracks, in markets where we think the fan base exists. And we've even shifted a lot of our product offerings to try to accommodate the fans as well. And, you know, we're not perfect. We make some mistakes, but it's been a good fit, and we'll continue to try to execute on that same strategy.
And this weekend, we're going to return back to Gateway. It's been a few years since we've been at that, so this is going to be a new track that you guys are going to get to experience in the Camping World Truck Series since it's been off the schedule. Would you like to see some more of these short tracks being added to the schedule, or are you comfortable with what NASCAR has provided to you in the diversity of the tracks this year?
Well, you know, I think NASCAR does a really solid job at understanding a number of issues when they're putting the schedule together. And remember that it's not all about whether it's a short track or a big track. It's really about how to make sure that these teams can afford to go to these races and that the fans are going to show up and that it's affordable for the fans to do it. You know, there's a couple tracks that I miss. I miss Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Mile is a great track. I'd love to see a little bit of road course racing, but I'm very pleased with the intelligence that NASCAR put into picking these tracks and the locations that they have. And I'm glad we're going back to St. Louis. I had a chance to meet the new owner, and he's got some big plans for that track, and I'm glad that we're going back there. There's a good fan base in that area.
And my final question for you for tonight, as a star of The Prophet on CNBC, you've got a saying, people, process, and product. How do you feel that's translated into your approach of NASCAR?
You know, it's a great question. I had NASCAR in one of my episodes last season, and I wouldn't do business with them if I didn't think they executed on all three facets. You know, Steve Phelps and Brian France and Patrick Rogers are the reason that I believe in the sport from a people standpoint. I think the competition team and the folks at the tracks have really executed on the process. And if anybody else could find a better product than NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Racing, I'd really challenge them. I think it's the best product for entertainment. It's affordable. It's fun. It's got a lot of energy behind it. And, you know, I'm excited. We're getting ready to go back to Eldora. If anybody could find a better product, I'd love to hear about it.
Well, Marcus, I appreciate you coming on tonight, and I think Tim has one quick question for you. I know you're kind of short on time with us, but I appreciate you coming on and talking with us tonight.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Marcus. Just one quick question. You know, then again, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. You brought up Eldora. You brought up Eldora there at the end, and I listen to a lot of serious NASCAR radio when I'm, you know, headed to work and everything. There's a lot of fans that would like to have another dirt track race as far as trucks, Nationwide Cup. But I think what y'all have done with Tony Stewart at Eldora, I think it, now this is just my opinion, Marcus, I think we need to leave that at that one dirt race that is one of the most exciting races that I have ever watched.
Well, I think not only that, but, you know, we also sponsor that race with one of my brands, Car Cash. And I think what was fascinating for me is when I arrived at Eldora last year for the race, I was blown away at the number of people who had been there for days, the fans, how excited they were, the drivers, how excited they were. And remember, it's still new. And so I think it's a special kind of race. It's got a lot of history behind it. It's got, you know, a great partner in Tony. And I think for right now, we just need to stick with one. We need to get it right, perfect it. I think we need to do a real road course before we go adding another dirt track to the lineup. But I'm happy. I'm excited to be there, and I'll be there this year.
Yes, sir. And, when I watched that, Marcus, I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm ranking it up with Daytona and Talladega and Bristol. I mean, this is some of the best dirt racing. Well, just anything that I've ever seen. It was so cool.
It was pretty awesome, wasn't it? It was pretty awesome.
Yes, sir. It was really awesome. And Marcus, I know your time is limited, but I got my good friend, I got a caller by the name of Todd Bigsby. Can you take one question before you go?
Absolutely. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to bring on Mr. Todd Bigsby. His track, he's upstate New York. Marcus, he's right there at Watkins Glen. Todd, you're in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson. You're with Marcus Lemonis, CEO of Camping World.
How you doing, Todd?
Good. Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I heard you say about road course, and of course, as you know, Watkins Glen is our road course track. How soon do you feel that you might see the trucks doing some sort of road course?
You know, I don't know. I've been pushing pretty hard for it because I'm a big fan of the Glen. I sponsored a Grand Prix there. We've done some other nationwide races there. And I really think that the trucks would do well there. As you could imagine, you know, it really all comes down to budgets and money, and these teams are already working their fannies off to try to raise the money to run the races, and you add a whole nother setup to the lineup, it makes it challenging. And so I think that we're going to have to figure out how to really make sure that they have sponsors and make sure that they have the funding they need in order to go to Watkins Glen. But I don't know if there's a better place. I actually love the racing that happens up there, and I love the environment, and I'm going to keep pushing for Watkins Glen because it's one of my favorite tracks.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time and answering my question for me, and I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to get to a track this year.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Marcus. And Stephen, any last thoughts with Marcus before we let him go? Because I know he's on a tight schedule. And Marcus, don't be a stranger. You can come back on anytime. We've got after the summer shootout, Mr. Larry McReynolds said just let him know, and we're gonna get him and AA back on after the summer shootout, and maybe Mr. Jim Baldwin, Dale Senior's hauler driver, he's going to come back on. We might have a big roundtable discussion. You can get
That'd
back
great.
To Stephen and, you know, okay.
That'd be
Stephen,
great.
Any
I'll
last thoughts? Marcus, you got the tape.
No, that's all. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Marcus. Ladies and gentlemen, that was probably one of the you would rank him. I mean, you know, he's Stephen. Wasn't he on that? What's that show? Stephen, hit me up. Were they going
to
cover? What, didn't he go undercover boss one time too?
I'm not sure if he was on undercover boss or not. He might have. I'm not sure. I just know him from CNBC, The Prophet.
Okay. I might have been seeing something, but I could have swore I seen. Anyway, okay, Stephen, that was a great call. I've got to send, Mr. Andy Hillenberg told me to send him a 10-minute warning, but I'll send it to him here in just a minute. Okay, we've covered the trucks from Friday night at Texas, and I covered some of the ARCA. My good friend Will Kimmel finished fourth there. Great, great run for him. Big shout out to Bill and Will Kimmel. And Stephen, if I can, I want to read this over, and then I'll hand it over to you and let you talk about some stuff, and I'll send Andy Hillenberg a 10-minute warning. This is from Pocono Raceway, Long Pond, Pennsylvania, 2.5-mile paved. Total race length, 160 laps, 400 miles. Dale Earnhardt Jr. won the Pocono 400, his 21st NASCAR Cup Series victory. Prior to the start of the race, the following car dropped to the rear of the field for the reason indicated, number 33, unapproved adjustments. Okay, time of the race was 2 hours, 52 minutes, 0.07 seconds. Average speed was 139.440 miles per hour. Margin of victory was 0.439 seconds. Caution flags was 7 for 26 laps. Lead changes 21 amongst 10 drivers. Here was the top 16. No, that's the driver points. I don't want to read that. But anyway, just a little stuff. And, Stephen, I'm going to let you have the floor. And, you know, you can talk about what happened at Pocono this weekend, what we got coming up at Michigan International Raceway. And I'm going to send Andy Hillenberg the 10-minute warning. You got it, bud.
So Dale Earnhardt Jr. won his second race of the season. Obviously, he won Daytona 500 earlier this year. This was his second win. That will pretty much, I feel, is going to lock him into the chase this fall. And we got coming up here in just a matter of a few weeks when we get out of Richmond. So we've got a couple things that happened up in Pocono. Kyle Busch and Casey Kane, obviously not too happy with one another out there. Kyle came up the racetrack, is what it looked like on TV, and put Casey up there in the wall, destroying his car out there. After the race, he made mention that he was none too pleased with Kyle Busch. So, you know, one of the things that we've got to look at is, you know, coming up here at Michigan is a mile and a half out, 2 miles out there at Michigan. And one of the changes that we've got this week is we have Juan Pablo Montoya that is on the entry list out there this week. He's going to run, this is his first of two races he's going to run this year for Penske. This is kind of him being able to adapt to the team and get out there and shake down some cars so when they come to Indy here in the next couple of weeks here that he's going to be able to run second race out there. We've got about 43 cars right now on the Nationwide Series entry list. A couple cars going to have to go home, obviously. We've got a couple different drivers out there that, you know, have not been able to run out there before, so it's going to make for an interesting race out there at Michigan. A lot of rookies out there this year, and we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah, that sounds good, Steve. And just, you know, while we're waiting on Andy here, we were watching the end of the race there. You know, Keselowski was leading. He had that big piece of it was hot dog wrap or whatever was on his grill. It was making him heat up a little bit, too. You know, Junior had a piece of something that was on his grill, too. And I don't think that Brad knew that Danica was as slow as she was, and he was going to pull over and try to get that, you know, try to get in the air draft there and get that piece of trash off the grill. And then Junior just slung shot by him. And, you know, the two car, he couldn't get, that 88 was getting some yonder, bud.
Yeah, he was. Early in the race, Dale Jr. said that with the trash, he had some trash on it early on in the race, too. And he made a comment early on that he said that it made the car perform a little bit better than without it. So coming up there on the end of the race, I think that was kind of a good thing for him, considering he was already saying that it was working well with him. As far as Brad Keselowski is concerned, you know, he did have that trash on the grill, and he made a comment after the race where he said that he didn't think that the Roush Yates guys out there in the engine shop would appreciate him bringing home a blown motor. Well, I kind of have to disagree with that. If he would have gone out there and gave it 100% in one race, even if he would have blown the motor, I think those guys would have been pretty happy with that, blown motor or not.
Oh, yeah. I do, too. I mean, you know, just checking in and another win and getting that, you know, NASCAR started doing that winner sticker where they're putting on the car. Yeah, I mean, I would have, you know, blow the motor, you know, just to, if it made it, it made it. If it didn't, it didn't. That's a chance you got to take. But I think he made a very big mistake when he tried to pull behind the 10 car and get the, and he didn't realize exactly how slow she was going to try to get in inside that. And, you know, you, Stephen, you brought up a good point early in the race. You know, Junior had that same thing, and the spotters and everything got with the crew chiefs, and Tony Stewart backed up to him and let Junior, you know, get in that draft. And for our listeners that are not real familiar about getting up in, when you suck up behind a car, it gets, it's sort of like of, hit me out here, Steve, it's like, is there's no air there once you get sucked up in there. And
it's a vacuum.
Go ahead,
it creates a vacuum between the cars.
Right, right. And, you know, it's just like, you know, driving down the interstate. You know, you've heard Larry McReynolds and DW talk about it, and I do it a lot, and Suzanne gets mad at me. I like to get up behind them transfer trucks. I don't get real close, but I like to get there where you can feel that wiggle, and that's what they call the air coming off.
Yeah, obviously. You know, I really don't think that Brad Keselowski knew how slow she was. She had been having problems all day long. She had already been into the wall. And the car was damaged to begin with. So, you know, that car out there on a track like that, 2.5 miles, you need the aerodynamics, and just that car was just not up to speed. I'm not saying that NASCAR should have taken the black flag and made her come into the pits, because obviously she was out there maintaining minimum speed. But it was just a bad decision for him. And I guess, you know, we can sit back on Mondays and Tuesdays and be armchair quarterbacks all we want and think about what he should have done, and it's always a shoulda, coulda, woulda. But, you know, I think he tried to do what he thought was going to be the best, give him the best opportunity to win. But as I just stated, I think if he would have given it that 100% and just kept on going, if the motor blew, the motor blew, I don't think anybody could have taken it away from him if he would have brought that thing back a winner.
I don't either, Steven. And, Steven, I want to bring Todd Beebsy back on. You know, he's stuck with us here through thick and thin. Todd, you have any thoughts or questions about what the topics we're talking about? Would you like to ask Stephen anything? You got the floor, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, Stephen and Tim, thanks for having me on. Well, as you know, this is race number 2 that Junior won with debris on the car. How many more races do you think debris is going to help him for a win?
Stephen?
You know, that's a hard one. You know, most tracks that he's been to, you know, obviously that downforce on the front part of the car is played a key, especially there at Pocono, where you have the tunnel turn, which is rather treacherous trying to get in and out of. And that front downforce that he's been provided with that piece of debris onto has obviously helped him, not only in the Daytona 500 where he won that, but this weekend again. I think, you know, one of the defining moments I think we'll see with him is that we're going back to Michigan. He's won at Michigan before in the Batman car. And I think, you know, we'll be in a similar situation where downforce is going to play a very big key. And not always does that trash on the grill, you know, help you out. Sometimes it hurts you just as much as it helps you. And you can take a look at Brad Keselowski as an example this weekend, where he was talking about 260s, 280s on the engine temp, and it was heading northward. You know, that car was getting hot. So I don't think it's necessarily the same, not only for him, but it just depends on what kind of car that they've got out there and the way that they've tuned them cars down.
Yeah, I do too, Stephen. And Todd, can you hold on? We've got Mr. Andy Hillenburg, and he's agreed to that. He said he is swamped, and I want to give a big shout out to Mr. Andy Hillenburg.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey,
There you go, Mr. Hillenberg. How you doing tonight, my friend? You're in the pit stop, Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and it's great to be here. It's always fun to talk racing.
Yes, sir, it is. And I want to thank you again for taking time out to call into our little show. We just talk, try to help the sport, and I want to remind all our fans again and everybody that calls in, Mr. Hillenberg requested we do not discuss the Speedway, but Andy, we want to talk about, you know, I've been around the sport ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and if you want to talk about, which, you know, I know we had the passing of Mr. Junie Dunleavy last night, and that's a sad time in our sport, but Andy, you got the floor if you want, which I know you don't want to talk about the track, but if anything you want to talk about you got coming up or some of your accomplishments, you got the floor, bud.
Oh, I don't know. I can say I just love to talk racing, so whatever you guys have been talking about, you know, we've been traveling a lot. I was up at Pocono here this past weekend. We'll be going out to St. Louis for the reopening there at Gateway with the NASCAR Camping World Trucks and be managing the USAC Silver Crown Division come this Saturday on the 14th. Really looking forward to that. And the week after that, we'll be up at the ARCA Series working with the CBS Sports Network with alongside Rick Benjamin doing the ARCA race for CBS Sports. And really excited about the next couple weeks that we got coming up.
Yes, sir. Mr. Hillenberg, I seen that, and I was hoping that you would bring it up. Yeah, that's something big that's going a big shout-out for yourself and CBS Sports and ARCA. That's really going to help the ARCA series. Stephen, you have any questions for Mr. Hillenberg?
Yeah, I got one question for you. You know, this year, you know, NASCAR brought a new car out there with new aerodynamics package to bring the racing a lot closer together, and we've seen a lot of passing this year, and every track that we've been to, we've broke records in passing, and we're seeing closer competition this year than we have in the years past. NASCAR is also looking at, you know, changing something with the engines, using taking away the horsepower, reducing the RPMs on the motors. What is kind of your take on that between the new aerodynamics package in the car and what they're looking at in the future as far as bringing down the horsepower for closer racing?
Well, I mean, obviously they've got a lot smarter people than just one or two sitting around. But it's always been my opinion that you need way more engine than you need tire. And I just hope that they don't take more, you know, so much engine away that the tires, you know, basically overpower the car. You drive them hard and it becomes more of a momentum type of a race, because I think it'll take away from the passing. But, you know, like I say, we've got to wait and see, and there's a whole lot smarter people making rules than me as far as on the technical side. But, you know, experience in racing, you know, I feel like they've got a really good package right now, and, you know, I think it's going to be pretty hard to top what they have right now. I mean, I think it can always use a tweak here or tweak there, but they've got a really doggone good show right now. And but at the same time, when they made these changes, you know, you had to wonder about those two, and they worked out well. And like I say, NASCAR has a lot of really smart people working for them. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see. And I just always want to make sure that you've got, you know, way more engine available to the drivers so they can drive these cars with their right foot, because that's what puts on a great show.
And Tim was just talking about this just a couple minutes ago about CBS taking over some of these ARCA races this year. Where do you see the ARCA racing coverage going to in the future? Because obviously, you know, a lot of people are starting to get more interested in the ARCA racing series now that it's becoming more of a breeding ground to get these guys up into NASCAR. And is CBS the right partner, or should they look at somebody like Fox Sports or even ESPN or next year NBC?
Well, and all of these, they're matches. I mean, it has to be good for both parties. And what they have now is they've got a really good program with ARCA. They've got 10 races on the Fox One, and then they've got the 3 races on CBS. And, you know, if it benefits both parties and the race fans, it's a winning situation. And that's what they've got in the ARCA Racing Series with 13, you know, of their 20 races on national television.
Well, you know, one of the arguments, I guess, could be made is that with CBS Sportsnet and along with Fox Sports 1, not everybody gets that, obviously, at home. There's still a lot of people that don't have cable or just don't have the cable packages for those types of, you know, channels. Is that doing ARCA a disservice in the way that they're being covered throughout the series and the media?
I don't think so. I think it's a positive to get anything, you know, whether it's a, you know, internet television broadcast or anything that you can do to even get to one more fan is great. You know, there's not going to, you know, there's four major networks, and you know, I don't see racing other than Cup or IndyCar racing, maybe an occasional race here or there, making those four network places. So I think they're right in line and right where they should be. And, you know, the race fans that do get that, you know, get a special treat, and hopefully more and more people can get it as it becomes more popular. But I think it's, you know, you can't, really, I don't think you could criticize any racing series, no matter what channel they get on. I mean, even if it's a, you know, anything, a soap opera channel or a game show channel, if they can get any portion of their race on television, it benefits the fans and it benefits the competitors and it benefits the sponsors. So I definitely take my hats off to what they're doing, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, Andy, I appreciate you coming on and answering my questions tonight. Good luck up there with the ARCA series and back up at Gateway when you guys head back that way to open that place back up again.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Mr. Hillenburg, I just want to throw out a little bit of stat, which I knew this, and Mr. Andy Hillenburg won the ARCA Supercar Series Championship in 1995 with three-time ARCA champion Bob Dotter as crew chief. He won the 1995 and 1997 Daytona ARCA 200, the premier event in the series. I just want to ask a question. How was it working with Mr. Bobby Dotter?
He taught me a lot about the sport and a lot about life, and I miss Bob Dotter very much. But he was definitely one of my mentors along, you know, the years in the sport. And, you know, there wasn't many better mentors than Bob Dotter.
Yes, sir. I will totally agree. And, Andy, I know you said that your time is very, very limited. I've got my good friend, Mr. Todd Bigsby, from upstate New York. His home track is Watkins Glen. Have you got time to take a question from Todd?
Absolutely. Fire away.
Okay. Todd, you're in the pit stop. Tim Despain, Stephen Wilson, Andy Hillenburg. Shoot out, bud.
Hi, Andy. You know, I hear a lot of good things about the racing and about the coverage and stuff. And as far as the ARCA goes, do you see that being even a little more televised so fans like me, who's into a little bit of everything, can actually see more?
Well, I sure hope so, because they went, you know, from 10 to now 13, so here in the past year or so. You know, I do see it growing and look forward to being a part of that. And, you know, the ARCA puts on some really great races. I had a great race at Pocono. They're at Michigan on Friday. And, you know, the more people that tune in, the more people that attend the races, the more people that build race cars and get to the racetrack, that helps everyone get the racing to the fans more.
All right, well, I appreciate you being able to ask my question, and thank you for taking the time.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful to hear from you.
Okay, Andy, thank you very much, and I'm going to let you go because I know you told me earlier that you were swamped, but thanks again, bud, and good luck to everything that you've got going on, and don't be a stranger. We'd like to have you back on the show in the near future, Mr. Hillenburg, and I would Stephen lives up in Martinsville, Virginia. Myself and him and my wife and his wife, we're going to go to the night race area at Richmond. But I would love to come up for the truck race there at your speedway. But anyway, I know you said you didn't want to talk about the racetrack, but thanks again, bud. And I'll get back with you. We can get you back on the show just whenever you want to, Andy. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Yes, sir. Have a good one. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Andy Hillenburg. And the number to call in is 215-383-3681. You're in the pit stop with Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson. We've still got Todd Bigsby here. Okay, we're waiting on... Oh, gosh, Stephen, I got so much going on. I think we're waiting on Tony B. Tony B is supposed to be coming on with his Everything Open Wheel. We hadn't heard from Tina Stull from NHRA. And got Tim Campbell coming on with the race weekend forecast for Michigan. And Stephen, let's talk a little. You know, we hit on that Junie Dunleavy thing, you know, about his passing last night. NASCAR statement on NASCARmedia.com. You know, he was one iconic figure for our sport, correct?
Yeah, it was. He fielded cars for 54 years out there for a lot of different drivers that got their start working with him. He never had the sponsorship, you know, as some of the mega teams. He went up a lot of times against some of these mega teams. But, you know, one of the things, you know, I read earlier, you know, earlier today, that came from Ford Racing. Somebody, they were talking with a couple guys that were used to work for him. He never complained. He never criticized. He just kept working, and he did the best that he could with what he had.
Yes, and you know that's what you call grassroots dirt road country boy racing. I guess from the cornfields of Iowa, like Mr. Humphrey Wither said last week on the show. But yeah, I would definitely agree, Stephen and Todd. What's your thoughts on Mr. Junie Dunleavy's passing?
Well, I can say I'm glad I have his hero card with his picture. And I have another one with just Hunt in it. And, you know, it's sad, you know, that he passed on. But the one thing is, you know, we can at least keep his memory going. And, you know, it's just amazing on how people pull together when such great people pass.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot, you know, we've had a lot of our great people pass. And just like, you know, everybody said, you know, NASCAR, whomever passes would say they would rather see the show go on. You know, they don't want to stop. They don't want to, I mean, you know, mourn me for a minute and let's go on racing.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I collect the hero cards is because, you know, when these great people pass, I can look back in my book and say, okay, I remember this guy or I remember this one, you know, and I just went out the other day and got 95 more hero cards and I got 10,000 more to go through and I'm trying to get some of everybody and now I have a very special one coming, which you know about, Tim, and
right.
To me, that getting the hero cards to me is exciting.
I remembered you talking about that. Next time, which you know, we're going to Richmond up there with Stephen. We'll get you a collection of cards, and either myself or Suzanne will mail them to you. We'll get your mailing address, and when we go to Talladega, we'll get some more. But Stephen, let's talk about this weekend's race at Michigan International. I heard some earlier stuff. It's going to be fast. They going in at 216, 217. They getting some yonder.
Yeah, Michigan is just one of those flat-out tracks. They can use that oval in the front to back down, and they're going to hit back about 212, 214, 216, somewhere along in there all throughout the race, and that's going to put a strain there on them motors. So I think this weekend one of the things that we're going to have to watch for again is we're going to have to watch for some of these motors that are being turned up so high for such a long period that I think we're going to see a couple expired motors this weekend. Hendrick Motorsports has had some bad luck this year already with their motors as it is. And, you know, they may have turned that around, and in the last few weeks it looks like that. But then I think this is going to be kind of one of their next true tests where you're going to see whether some of the changes that they've made is going to make a difference, especially this weekend on a fast racetrack like Michigan.
Yes, I will agree, Stephen. I mean, you know, just like you say, you get them RPMs wound up there. You know, that's why, you know, the Pocono 400 used to be the Pocono 500. I don't know if some of our fans knew that. And it was pushing it too far. And, you know, they were blowing motors, in which they still, you know, they were running 9,400 RPMs going in, and, I mean, it was a constant. But, yes, they did shorten the Pocono race. And but you take Michigan, which is a two-mile oval, which is a non-restrictor plate track, and you take Talladega and Daytona. Just like my good friend Will Kimmel, we were at Talladega this time, and Will said, you know, he his engine expired with about 30-something laps in when he came in and pitched. Myself and Suzanne was sitting there, and once he got over, you know, that, you know, he said, Tim, you never would think you'd lose a motor on a restrictor plate racetrack. But, I mean, you know, things happen, stuff happens, but just like with poor old Will, if he didn't have no bad luck, he wouldn't have none at all. But I want to give him a big shout-out to him and Amanda Leach, Ingersoll Rand, for finishing fourth at the ARCA race in Pocono. And I hate to keep harping on that, but I think he's got somewhere to go. I really do. And, Stephen, did you watch any of the ARCA race?
No, I didn't watch any of the ARCA race this weekend.
You didn't? Okay. And we've got a caller. I see Suzanne's got somebody. I think it might be Tony B. But, Todd, what did you think about the ARCA race at Pocono this past Saturday?
Well, considering the track is 1 hour from my house, I really like how they run. I mean, seeing some of these guys fighting for to get to up there and watching them go like they do, I mean, that takes some real talent. I mean, I wish I had that talent, but unfortunately, I have a fan talent.
Yes, sir, that's right. And Todd and Stephen, I want to bring this is our meteorologist from Stillwater, Oklahoma, storm chaser, Mr. Tim Campbell. We want to get him in and do that. Tim, how you doing tonight, son? Missed you last week.
Yeah, I was kind of busy. Got tied up in watching a bunch of storms and had people out in them and couldn't really get loose.
Yeah, I know. I can understand that. No problem. We had some pretty good stuff come through here earlier, and I was afraid when I got home I was not going to have power to do the show, but whenever we got here, everything's good. Tim,
yeah,
you got
trying to find Steven some snow out there.
Steven loves snow.
No, man, we have plenty of snow this year. I don't want to see any more snow right now. I'm a tropical person.
Well, it looks like we're going to have a fairly good weekend. Friday's been, we're looking at mostly sunny, highs in the low 70s, and Friday night mostly clear, lows in the upper 40s. And Saturday's going to be sunny, high in the upper 70s. And Saturday night's going to be mostly clear, lows in the mid-50s. And then race day is going to be mostly sunny with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high around 80. And then Sunday night's going to be partly cloudy, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-60s. So I'm kind of hoping that the 20% will hold off until the 30%, and we'll get 50% in the night and not get none during daytime.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I say it every week, and, you know, just like our local weather people here say, it's hard to predict that far out, and which I want to thank you for posting on my wall and my fan page and Steven's fan page and all that. That way we can share it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that 20%, which it could grow or it could shrink, right, Tim?
Yeah, it may not even rain, but hopefully it'll hold off until the evening, and then maybe it would just get 50% chance at Sunday night, and they'll be nice during the daytime when it's racing, and highs in 80 should be dry, whatever, up if it does thunderstorm a little bit, maybe.
That's 10-14. Now, did I hear you say Friday night's going to be in the 40s?
Yeah, going to be in the upper 40s Friday night.
Ooh, Stephen, it might be some snow up there.
Yeah, we don't need any snow, that's for sure.
No, I'm like you, Stephen. I'm myself and Suzanne, and I'm sure you and Miss Anne-Marie, I'd rather be on the beach or on the river or by the pool or something. Todd, do you have any questions about your weather forecast up there in upstate New York? You got the floor, Mr. Tim Campbell, Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Well, Mr. Tim, finally nice to be able to talk to you. Appreciate your weather forecast. I know for us, we have rain coming in, a little bit of every day.
Yeah, you guys seem to be getting it up there pretty good. This is one place I don't think I'd want to live in, New York, if I didn't like rain.
Well, it's rain or Tim's favorite snow.
That's not my favorite. That's what we've been aggravating Stephen about the snow.
Yeah, excuse me, Stephen. Sorry. And we get the snow because we're near the snow belt, so I'm glad I can handle the rain.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we need a little bit of rain out here. We're kind of drying up.
Well, I don't want to say that we want to give y'all none because as long as we're getting rain, we're not in a drought. And, Tim, I want to thank you again for being our meteorologist. Thank you very much for coming on and being a part of our show on Speedway Digest Radio Network. And, Todd, thank you very much for supporting us and everything. And we're going to wait on Mr. Tony. We're going to wait on Tony B to come on. And I'm going to put y'all on mute. All right, Stephen, let's talk a little bit about this race weekend while we're waiting on Tony B. It's going to be very, very, very interesting. And, you know, we've got – and everybody keeps saying that – I don't know where these people come up with saying that we're going to have 16 winners. Stephen, we're not going to have 16 winners, are we?
No, I don't think that we're going to hit 16. I think at best we're looking at maybe 12 or 13 at this point. We're not too far away from going back to Richmond here in September. So the time is dwindling very quickly. You're starting to see some of the more established teams like your Hendricks asserting their dominance out there. Already this year they already have four of the wins, with two with Jimmy Johnson, two with Dale Earnhardt Jr. Out there. You also have Kevin Harvick out there that has multiple wins too. So the teams that are starting to dominate now are going to continue to dominate throughout the rest of this until we get to Richmond here in the next few weeks. So if we're not going to see those 16 at best, like I say, now that we've got a better idea on who can win and who can't each week, who's running up front, I think at maximum we're going to have about 12 or 13, which are going to leave three open spots out there for guys once we get to Richmond and lead there.
That's what I would calculate too, Stephen. And just to throw out, myself and Suzanne, we're coming up there with y'all. We're coming to Richmond International Speedway for our first time, and a big shout-out to them for accommodating us and y'all. And we're going to get to come up there and hang out and have a wonderful time. And, you know, you hit on Hendrick Motorsports. And I've got two questions. I'm going to go from Hendrick to Roush. Casey Kane's future at Hendrick Motorsports. Just your opinion. How does it look?
David, at Hendrick Motorsports, I absolutely numbered. He's been able to bring the sponsorship into the team, and that's very well known. He's also been able to bring the merchandising and the marketing to the team. However, his on-track performance is less than stellar. In the last several seasons, if I remember correctly, he has one win with Hendrick Motorsports, whereas even Dale Earnhardt Jr. has now multiple wins in the same amount of time. You know, you take a look at Jimmy Johnson out there too. Even Jeff Gordon, who in the last couple of years has kind of, you know, it seems like he was laying back a little bit and his performance was beginning to go down. He's now got a spark of interest back out there again. He's won this year already. He has a renewed interest in getting there into the chase this year. But absolutely with, you know, you take a look at the time schedule that Dale Earnhardt had set for Chase Elliott, where we're talking maybe 2016 for to get him for, or even full-time into the Cup Series, even if it's just maybe even just a partial schedule that year. But in the next 2 years, you know, we're going to see Chase Elliott at Hendrick Motorsports, and he's going to take the seat of that number five car. There's no doubt about it. And Casey is no matter at this point what he can do, he's the odd man out. He's obviously going to lose his rod at some point, and he's going to be with somebody else.
Suzanne, if you're listening, didn't I tell you the same thing Stephen just said? You're going to see Chase Elliott in the five car, and I know she's listening. And that was very good, Stephen. And my I see she wants to jump in and jump back out. All right, Stephen, my next question. You've got Carl Edwards and Greg Biffle, and I had heard rumor that Greg had made a verbal signing his contract with Roush. I hadn't heard nothing out of Carl. I've heard rumor, you know, Twitterville, Facebook, you know what you're going to hear. I've heard rumor Carl Edwards to Joe Gibbs Racing. Just throwing that out there. What's your take on that, bud?
Well, as far as my understanding, this past weekend there was a verbal acknowledgement at least given to some members of the media at Pocono where Greg Biffle is going to commit again to Roush Fenway Racing for next year and beyond, although that no contract has been signed as of yet. But there's at least some advancement in that direction where he will stay with Roush Fenway. I believe that he was always going to stay with Roush there. He's had a decent run with them. It's not always been the most stellar run, but he's always had a sense of accomplishment with Roush. Carl Edwards is one of those guys that he's been at Roush his entire career in NASCAR. And for him to leave there would, you know, it's hard to tell. He's got wins there. He's been able to perform. He's in the top five in points right now. And it's a good possibility that if he continues his consistency throughout the year, we're going to see him in the chase this year. But I don't think that's going to be enough to keep him at Roush Fenway just because he has made comments in the media even as early as Dover last week where he's talking about the performance of the cars and how they need to make changes there. I don't know if Roush Fenway can make the changes fast enough to get him to commit back again. And we've heard everything from Penske Motorsports, in which Roger Penske says, no, I have not had any conversations with Carl Edwards to come over. Obviously, Ford Racing wants to keep him in their camp as they see him as a valuable marketing partner with the Ford branding. If he follows his teammate, Matt Tennant, to Joe Gibbs Racing, that will give him, I think, an immediate help over there at Joe Gibbs. Just with Kenseth being over there, we're seeing Kenseth run better. But even J.D. Gibbs is even denying that he's had any conversations with Carl Edwards. So it's hard to tell what's going to happen. I'm still on the fence on whether he's going to go or whether he's going to stay. But, you know, I know that Ford wants to keep him in their camp. But whether he'll stay or not, that's remains to be seen.
Yeah, that is definitely a good thought, Steve. I mean, you know, yeah, Ford would love to keep him. But, I mean, and, you know, you brought up a point there about him and Matt Kenseth. You know, him and Matt had, which I'm pretty sure they're over by now, they had a few spats. But, and, you know, Joe Gibbs is just a three-car team, and NASCAR allows you to have a four-car team. That's your top out, and that is a good point. But, Stephen, I don't know what's happened to our Indy 500 champion crew member. He must have had something to come up. But and I know you mentioned that you didn't want to pick on the air because you thought you was giving away. But I'm doing pretty good in our fantasy racing league. But if you would like to pick, we'll bring Suzanne's done jumped over there. She wants to pick.
No,
but
Stephen,
I know.
Go ahead,
Suzanne.
And he's calling in. I think
he's fishing the call.
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on.
Okay, go back and get him. Okay. And Stephen and Todd, y'all, I want to give a big shout-out to Suzanne. You know, she manages the phone lines and tries to keep the riffraff down, and she does a great job of it. And a big shout-out to Suzanne. But, yeah, there. Anyway, Stephen, if you – if you want to pick, I think I'm going to write Stephen Wilson down for Buckshot Jones. Stephen's picking Buckshot, the 00. And see, I think I'm going to pick. Let me see who I can pick. I think I'm going to pick. I'm trying to. I'm going to pick Dave Marcus. I've got Dave Marcus. And I'm going to write Suzanne down for, let's see, who can Suzanne pick? I'm trying to be,
Junior Johnson.
Let's put Suzanne.
We'll go with Jane Johnson first.
I was thinking the same thing. Suzanne's going to pick Junior Johnson. And let me bring Todd on right quick. Todd,
yeah.
Who you going to pick? We can't give away our Fantasy Racing League picks. Suzanne's got Junior Johnson. Steven's got Buckshot Jones, and I've got Dave Marcus. Who you gonna pick?
Of course, I'm gonna pick Dale Jr.
Oh, you're going right out the bat, then. He's giving away his pick, Steven.
Well, we'll see how that holds up. He's won there at Michigan, and he's obviously going to be strong at Michigan. So we'll see what that's actually a decent pick there. I'd be inclined to agree with him on that one.
I would too. I would, and I'm gonna go ahead and tell you the truth. I think I might pick him because you know he's definitely good there. And this might be our first three-time winner this year. Anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know who this is on the phone, but ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you. I want to thank Speedway Digest. I want to thank Stephen Wilson. I want to thank Talladega Short Track. Talladega Super Speedway, everybody that has been a part. Well, here he comes. Here he comes. We're going to bring on Tony B. I didn't know that was him. Wait a minute. I got to find my button that I always play when Tony B comes on. I wondered where he was at. I mean, you know, my goodness. But here's Tony B, ladies and gentlemen.
Say hello to my new friend.
There you go, Tony B. There's your intro, bud. You got the floor.
Oh, yeah. How are we this evening?
We're doing good. You're in here with it's me and Stephen Wilson and Todd Bigsby from upstate New York. Tony, we're going to give you the floor, and I'm going to step over in the mute, and you got Stephen and Todd. Y'all talk about whatever you want to. I know you want to talk about the open wheel stuff, so I'm going to step aside. You got the floor, bud. Tony Bajinski with his segment, Everything Open Wheel, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, it's good to be on the air with you fellows, and got a lot of good things going on with Open Wheel right now. You have to be excited when AJ Foyt is trying to get the likes of Jeff Gordon back at the Indianapolis 500. And, you know, so there's some great things going on. USAC just made their Eastern Storm Tour in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and had very successful with Brady Bacon from Colorado taking the championship for that. And starting Wednesday, which is tomorrow, Indiana Midget Week starts. So a lot of things going on for, you know, most of these drivers, as, you know, when you think of a Jeff Gordon or a Ryan Newman, you know, all these guys started either in karting or something, and then they move on to NASCAR. And so there's some great drivers that are out there, and there's a lot of good racing going on. Really excited to be a part of it. I just wish I'd get my fantasy racing league to be as good as the racing is going to be in the next week in the middle part of the United States.
Well, I'm gonna have to go out on this one real quickly on Jeff Gordon. And some people may crucify me for this one, but Jeff Gordon is beyond the point.
You can't handle the truth.
but Jeff Gordon is beyond the point in his career where he's going to be able to run 1,100 miles in one day. I don't think he can do it. He's beyond that point. He's a good sprint cup driver right now. He has nothing to really prove in the rest of his career other than sit back and see where the chips fall. But I just don't think he can do it. I don't think he can. He doesn't. He's beyond that point in his career.
I tend to agree with you, Stephen. I believe the other one point was going to take was Tony Stewart. And right now, I think Smoke's trying to get himself together to do what it takes to run Sprint Cup.
Yeah, he is. He's struggled a little bit this year, and, you know, obviously he's making gains out there. I mean, this weekend, obviously, he had the speeding penalty. He was up there leading with both Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick in tow, and they were swapping the lead out there, and he took responsibility for that out there. I think he ended up like 31st, 32nd out there because of that issue. But, you know, he's trying to get himself together, and he's another one. I don't think he's going to be able to return and run that 1,100 miles. I think it's going to have to be somebody else.
I tend to agree with you. And, Kurt Busch kind of put me in a back seat because he really did well. And I thought he'd be a mid-pack man. And he's somewhat qualified that way, but he ran a good race. And thank God he had his crash before the race day. But I don't think that that's what we're looking for, is everybody trying to do the 1,100-mile day. If the venues would cooperate a little more with one another and there'd be a little more time frame, I think you'd see more of it. But the fans, I think they want it. What do you think, Stephen?
No, I think the fans do want it. They want to see if a driver can perform. They want to see if they can overcome the hurdles of running, you know, that many miles on one day. Unfortunately, like I say, and this is no disservice to any of these guys, definitely not Tony Stewart and definitely not Jeff Gordon. They've done a lot in their career. But 1,100 miles on one day, and you're cramming it in that quickly where you've only got about a two-hour time frame from the time you take the checkered flag in Indy to the time you hop in that car down in Charlotte. You know, these guys, you know, they're not spring chickens by any means. Not to say that they aren't physically fit, that they can't drive a car, but that is a lot of toll that you're going to put on your body. And, you know, you take a look at Kurt Busch, where even Rick Hendrick had his personal doctor watch over him for 3 days prior to the Indianapolis 500 and him going there to Charlotte. You know, that is mentally, physically, and emotionally draining to try and do something like that. And unfortunately for these guys, like Tony Stewart, like Jeff Gordon, they're not, as anybody would agree, back in the prime of their career. They've still got a lot of racing in them. But I don't think they just can't do it. It's physically just too demanding on their body to try and do something like that.
Yeah, and you know, Stephen and Tony, you know, Jeff Gordon's back problems, you know, which I've got back problems too. I had surgery back in 2009. I ruptured my L4 and L5. And, you know, with Jeff having back problems, and, you know, if they're talking about doing that, letting Jeff do the double, that's really going to be stressful on him. Am I right, Tony?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know, unless you're involved with the Indy Racing, those seats, I mean, they are formed right to the back, every crack, every crevice. That's how those seats are made. It's not a seat that you walk out and purchase. It's materials are put together, put in the car, and then the driver is put in the car, and it's shaped around him. And so every rattle, every vibration goes right through your entire body. And it's, you know, there is no padding or big cushions that go in it. It is what it is. It's a form of your body, and that's how they keep you where they want you in the cockpit. And I think it'll be very, very difficult on his back. I agree, Tim.
Yeah. And so you're saying basically, Stephen, if I can, I'll ask this other question, and I'll let you have Tony back. Basically, it's like a body glove, correct? I mean, you know, everything is molded,
yes,
fitted. It's like a body glove.
Absolutely. It certainly,
okay,
most certainly is.
Okay. Thanks, Tony. Stephen?
So I watched a little bit of the Detroit Grand Prix this weekend, doing the double up there this weekend. Didn't really get to watch a whole lot of it, but it seemed a little bit interesting to me that they're racing out there through the streets of, you know, out there through Detroit. I never quite understood why IndyCar would actually do something like that, or even Formula One would do that. That just seemed a little bit too dangerous, and the environment was just too uncontrolled for a driver to really feel comfortable in.
I could tell you when I was on the IndyCar tour, we won the Belle Isle with Scott Dixon, and but that race was stopped because the roads were coming apart, and they had to all but resurface an area so they could restart the race. And quite frankly, in my opinion, it is a right and a left-hand turn, and people want to see road courses, but that is not the area to be doing it. You know, Houston was better, but I don't think we're getting good passing zones. It's not good for television. It's not good for the drivers, and, you know. And I think everybody pretty much saw that it was not a really good show. There was not areas that two cars could be next to each other passing in a corner, and that's much needed.
Yeah, I mean, if you take something like that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of road courses out there. You know, we have BRR here in Virginia. You've got Road Atlanta. You've got Road America. You've got a lot of road courses out there that they can run at. And what is the kind of trepidation from them running at some of these road courses and looking at things like the streets of St. Petersburg or looking at the Houstons and the Belle Isle?
Well, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'm correct. A lot of these races are promoted by Andretti Motorsports, Penske Racing, and, you know, Penske is involved with the ordeal. Elmore Chevrolet is in the Detroit area. You know, Baltimore is run by Michael Andretti. And I think that is part of it, and these guys are working, and but as far as I'm concerned, put the boys back at Atlanta, Kentucky Motor Speedway, places, let's run the Oval. And if we're going to run road courses, let's go to Watkins Glen. Let's go to Road America, Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, there are great places to run, and Barber Motorsport Park is one of the most beautiful facilities you'll ever see. But that track is not made for automobiles. It's a motorcycle track. I don't know if people know that, but it's tight for the cars, but it is a beautiful facility. So, you know, there are good facilities like that out there, but I think if the sport wants to grow, they need to get back to running these venues that are made for exactly that, and that's how I feel about that, Stephen.
All right, let me throw this one out here. I'm going to throw you a curveball. Years ago, the IndyCar series used to run here at Richmond International, 3/4 mile. And I used to go up there and watch these guys, and there would be about 300 people literally sitting in the stands to watch these guys. I always saw these guys out there. I mean, they put on a very, very fast show around Richmond International Speedway. I always thought that was too fast for Richmond International Speedway. So what's your thoughts on bringing the IndyCar series back to a shorter track that's not necessarily like the Kentucky 1.5 mile or an Auto Club Speedway, which is another 1.5 miles?
I think that is a wonderful idea. I would love to see that. It would be good for motorsports. It would be good for the sanctioning body with the Verizon IndyCar League. And, you know, get back to places like Rockingham. Get back to places like Gateway Motorsports Park in St. Louis. You know, USAC is running there on Saturday with the Silver Crown cars. And the thing that I want to see happen, and I have been talking with the officials from USAC, we need to have to where IndyCar runs and your support races are midgets or sprint cars or Silver Crown cars. And, you know, bring back the day when I was a young man, my father was taking me to these races, and we could follow these guys, and we knew who they were. Unfortunately, we've come to a day to where Takuma Sato is a good driver. The year that we won the Indianapolis 500, Takuma Sato was in second place, spun and trying to pass Dario, and Chip Ganassi Racing ended up finishing first and second. But nobody knows Takuma Sato. He's never run a dirt race, a midget, a sprint, a Silver Crown car. And, it, you know, the bottom line is we want to put lots of fans in the stands, everybody watching TV and helping these sponsors that help motorsports. And the way you do that is you open it up to where they're doing what the fans want. And it's a pretty good deal, or at least it was when I was a kid. I didn't have to tell AJ Foyt what my name was. He knew who I was, and I've seen him race in Johnny Rutherford and Mario Andretti and Billy Englehart and the list, Jim McElroy, George Snyder. It goes on forever, and we need to get back to coming from the bottom and going to the top, and I think you're going to see it not only in IndyCar, but in all divisions of motorsports, that any more money just doesn't take care of this situation. And I feel very strongly about that, Stephen.
Yeah, definitely. There needs to be, I think we've discussed before, they need to have some sort of feeder series like the NASCAR home track, where people can follow them from their local short track, or even their regional racetracks all the way up into, you know, in this case, IndyCars and IndyCar Light Series.
I mean, you know, that's what these other divisions are about. And, you know, back in my day for NASCAR, there was ASA, there was All Pro, and now you have CRA. And it's so these people can graduate and move up, and when they move up, they take their fans with them, and it's really a neat thing. And you know, I'm not saying anything bad about, yes, the folks can drive, they are great at what they do, but they're trying to fill the stands and give good shows. You need to listen to the fans and make it more easier for the fans to be involved with the people and you know, I know that you know, it's easier at a NASCAR race to get in, see the drivers, the mechanics, the people on the pit crew, than it is at Indy. But it's important, you know, so you feel like you're down to that level, and it gives you a great interest about what they're doing.
Yeah, and Tony and Stephen, if I can I put in, I want to touch on a very good point, Stephen, that you made, and you too, Tony B, also made about your NASCAR home tracks, your local dirt tracks. And myself and Suzanne have been going to Talladega Short Track here, and I want to give them a big shout-out, too, for coming aboard. And that summer, that's your grassroots racing. I mean, you know, them guys work a 40-hour week, sometimes 60-hour week. They come out there, they bring whatever they got to the track, and they put it out there. And, you know, if I step on some feet in NASCAR, I mean, you know, you got – people that's, well, this and that happens, you know, I can't believe that happened, you know, and all that. But then you take a old dirt road redneck country boy from Talladega, Alabama, you put him on a dirt track, and after he gets done, if he wins it, fine. If he finishes last, fine. He said, I had a blast.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean,
and,
that,
you know,
that's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're out there. You know, and Tony, you know, Stephen, you know, and you're not making a living running a super late model at Talladega Short Track. You're just having fun. It's a hobby. It's a very expensive hobby. And we've had a lot of guys on the a couple of weeks ago. You know, we had some interviews from Ross Martin. They were trying out a new Chevrolet motor that ain't no telling what it costs. But most of his pit crew, which I'm pretty sure all of his pit crew at Ross Martin's pit crew, was volunteers. And like my good friend Adam Galdem, he's running. I think he's leading the points in the crate model here. I mean, you know, everything they do is because they love the sport, the passion for racing, on dirt, and. You know, some of them guys, like Humpy said last week, you know, Stephen will agree, you know, you take your average racer, are you seeing the best 43 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series drivers on the racetrack? No, you're not. And I don't want to offend nobody. I'm not going to bring up the money. I'm not going to bring up names, but... You know, there's some guys out there, and Tony knows it, Stephen, you know it too, that by God, they'll race your butt off at a dirt track, at a local dirt track, all across the United States of America, every dirt track, and it's something. When you watch them super late models hit the track, just like Suzanne said, she said, oh my God. I said, that's something to see, ain't it, Suzanne? She said, yes, sir, it is. What's your take on that, Tony B?
I think it's very important, and it keeps more people involved with motorsports. And the bottom line is, I've lived a good motorsports career, and I'm trying to give back and keep it going and growing and doing well. And like your young friend Cody, that young man is going to be in a NASCAR soon. But when he goes, my goodness, people have been watching this young man in go-karts and the up-and-coming, everything that he could run and doing well. And I just think that that's important to have these smaller divisions to where not only they can learn the talent, get seat time, and the ability to go even higher, but bring the fans with them, because it's very important to me. I not only want to, that's why I'm doing the work with Brace Yourself, I want to secure the drivers as best we can, and I want to take care of the sponsors and have as many fans as we can, because I want motorsports to last forever. And I'm putting my time in to build the sport, to help the drivers, the families, the crews. And it's very important. And if we want to keep doing what we do, we've got to keep growing and keep people safe and keep putting good products out there and having as many fans as we can get to keep the sponsors happy and keep the income coming in.
Amen, Tony B. And, you know, we've had Steve has probably been following Kenzie Rushton. I watched her on TV the other night, and then our good friend Brooke Storr, she finished second the other night. And, you know, you got these two young ladies coming up. And I want to give a big shout-out to you, Tony, for everything that you do for safety with Mr. Paul Cleveland and Brace Yourself. And, you know, I've mentioned here at the Talladega Short Track, there's a few of these drivers that would like to see that new, I can say head and neck restraint without saying Hans. Well, I said Hans.
Yes.
But the new safety device.
You said it, but that's
let's
fun
just call
right.
it. Okay. Let's just say the new safety device that Mr. Paul Cleveland has invented, and you're a big part of this promoting that. There's I've talked to some of the dirt drivers here at Talladega Short Track. They would like to see it, and if we can get Mr. Paul Cleveland to maybe send me one, I can take out here and let the guys test it, see what they think about it. And if you want to talk about that, Tony, you got the floor, bud.
Well, we are absolutely very close and ready to launch Full Tilt with motorsports from karting all the way to Formula One. And the bottom line is this device secures your helmet, your head and your neck, and you're not relying on the safety belts and the tightness of them for this device to work. And you can turn your head to the right and to the left, and it doesn't matter if the impact is from the side, the front, the rear, this device works. Keeps you from basal skull fractures, keeps you from the bad head injuries. And I believe, Tim, you put on about Jim Singer's crash at Williams Grove as a support race for the USAC guys. He had a terrible crash.
Right.
And he was near death. He exploded his helmet. And they're still investigating to as exactly how that come to pass. But I can tell you, if this man would have been in a Brace Yourself, he would have had a better outcome. And that's what, you know, we are trying to help people, their families, their owners, everybody. It's not a good thing. And unfortunately, in motorsports, all the way from karting, all the way to Formula One, some of these accidents are high impact. They're very violent. But if we support these people and they are in good seats, and I'm giving Randy LaJoy a shout out for putting good seats in these vehicles, and we are going to take care of their head and their neck and make these people safer so they can race. And in the situations where we have these bad accidents, these drivers can get out, talk to you, thank you for the devices that they had on, and Brace Yourself is just that. You know, the G-forces, if the belts loosen, it will not affect your head or your neck, and you have visibility full circle, and it doesn't matter where your impact come from. With the other head and neck safety devices, your seatbelts have to be tight for these to work. And it doesn't help you with side impact. And a very good friend of mine, Rico Abreu, is going to be at Indiana Midget Week. He's a good old California young man. But he has a broken collarbone due to a malfunction
on another device. That's what we're trying to help these people and make it good for them. And we want to give back to the people that have given to us for years. And we're going to start new divisions and put a lot of money in drivers' pockets from the bottom to the top. And that's brace yourself, Mr. Paul Cleveland from Australia. And I'm their motorsports and safety director. I used to be the safety director for the American Speed Association. I am very, very gifted at what I have done and what I can do. And we're out to help people. And thank God for people like Mr. Stephen Wilson and Mr. Tim Despain and Suzanne Despain, because we're getting our word out and we're going to help some people, we're going to save some lives, and we're going to keep motorsports growing, because this is what we love and this is what we do. And that's why my best saying that I made up, live, love, race.
Amen, Tony B. Amen. Thank you very much, Tony. And Stephen, do you have any final thoughts, questions, whatever, dirt, whatever? You got the floor, bud. Go ahead.
No, man, I think I took the show over a little bit too much tonight. I'm going to let you guys talk for a little bit now.
No, you didn't, bud. No, you didn't. You are co-owners, so I'm, it don't bother me. But, yeah, Tony, Stephen, I want to thank y'all for coming on. Todd Bigsby, I've got Todd in mute. And Tony, we never did hear from Tina, so maybe we can figure out what happened to her. But just a big shout-out to everybody that follows us and listens to us. You know, we're a nonprofit organization, just like Stephen Wilson. We do this for the love and the passion of sport, just like Tony B does. And just like Tony wants to, he wants to protect everybody. And everybody go out and support your local short tracks, your dirt tracks. Go to your ARCA races, your nationwide races, your cup races. And Stephen, thanks for being a good friend. Tony B, thank you. Todd Bigsby, thank
Amen.
You. And a big let me see if I covered everybody. All right, well, big shout-out to Talladega Super Speedway, Talladega Short Track, Paul Cleveland, brace yourself, and I left off Top Trails, Mr. John Tullamore, Fort Wheeler acreage here in Talladega, Top Trails, and I can't think of anybody else. A big shout-out to Grant Lynch and Russell Branham, Price Mason here at Talladega Super Speedway for everything they do. Big shout out to everything at Richmond International Raceway, and thanks, Stephen, for getting us hooked up with Miss Amy Turner. And we're going to come up there in the fall, and I'm hoping Tony B and Miss Jan can come up. And so don't nobody have any final thoughts. Thank y'all very much for the support, and we'll see you next week at the Pit Stop Radio with Speedway Digest, Tim Despain, and Stephen Wilson, and Tony B. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Y'all too. Yeah.